Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 835.LK0538, certificate number 38738, New Coke.
The great new taste of Coke. Watch for it, try it, and enjoy the best tasting Coke ever.
So for the last 8 years, we've been trying to think of things that maybe would be lost in a cataclysm. Ideas, historical events, cultural things that mattered maybe to us but wouldn't survive the electromagnetic pulse that wiped out most of what we think of as our culture.
And you think New Coke. I have not thought about much about it lately.
So in 8 years, and for the first, 4 years, we did two shows a week. We've been trying to think of ideas for the show, and almost at no point have we suggested a show topic to the other, because we greedily hold on to whatever show topics we think of, because we're always desperate for content. But when we talked about this show, which is Ken's last show,
As regular co-host,
he's going to be coming back as a guest. He suggested New Coke, but he suggested it for me. I know, isn't that sweet? The problem is, the more I thought about it, the more I realized that it was an imperfect metaphor for this situation.
A beloved product.
Yeah.
Ill-advisedly decides to update its recipe.
And so as I was preparing the show, I was like, am I the Coca-Cola company? Who am I? I'm not Pepsi. And so I'm going to really try and tamp down the however much New Coke is being used as analogous to our situation, which is that I'm continuing the Omnibus project. Thank you. But because Ken is irreplaceable, he's charming, he's maybe America's smartest boy. Also very witty. I mean, how could I replace him with just one co-host? I thought, well, why not invite all of our listeners to suggest show ideas and come on the show one after another, what better to replace Ken with than dozens and dozens of people who have never done any show business at all, who are talking to me through Logitech, like, gamer headsets.
It takes a village.
It takes a village, that's right. So anyway, that is how we got to New Coke. And here are my notes, my analog notes on New Coke. Now, I don't want to ruin our long history of not talking about the topic for many, many hours.
What's your history with soda pop? Were you a... You say pop. Washington State,
say
pop, right? All, the old timers.
By applause, how many people say pop? Yeah.
They're going to get dwarfed by the soda applause right now. But this was a pop state before all you weirdos moved here.
Yeah. That's right. We grew up calling it pop, and my mom was a typical 70s mom in that she was suspicious of too much pop. But I grew up in a time when, I mean, my high school had a pop machine that you could just...
Is that not a thing anymore? I'm so out of touch.
No, you can't drink pop in a... You can't... Maybe even you can't bring it to school. I don't know.
We had... My grandparents had what I now understand is a very Midwestern-coded thing. They had the pop fridge in the garage. Did you ever have a pop fridge in the garage?
No, we didn't.
I guess apparently if you're from the middle of America, everybody had this. My grandparents had it, and we thought it was the greatest idea. Because we could go out and get, well, we did not know were ephemeral 80s sodas that would soon be gone. We could have all the Mandarin Orange Slice and all the Tab we could drink.
So I was always a Dr. Pepper fan, as I know you were. But my dad, very early on, drank Tab. How many Tab fans are there in the crowd? Yeah.
My mom always had a Tab.
Yeah. And the funny thing about Tab is it was introduced in the 60s, at which point all diet sodas, the original diet soda was introduced in the 50s as a drink for diabetics. It was like... considered like a crazy thing that you would want to drink diet pop. It was called No Cal Ginger Ale, and it was sweetened but with cyclamate.
Which it turned out.
Well, let's not get to the turned out just yet on cyclamate.
Well, let me go back further then. Like, it's kind of funny that, you know, they had to market these special diet sodas for diabetics because... Didn't cola kind of originate as like a health tonic?
Well, the funny thing about...
I was not asking you, ma'am. I was...
Yes, it did.
I was asking Mr. Roderick.
Thank you.
But do you and she agree that it was originally a...
The funny thing is that all of the pops that we're going to talk about in our show today were originally invented by pharmacists. And Coke was invented by a Confederate colonel...
Slash pharmacist?
Who's a pharmacist and a morphine addict.
Pharmacists must have had more free time then. When I see a pharmacist now, he always looks so frantic.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much going on back there. But back then, he was just like, I wonder if I can make a refreshing drink.
The thing about being a pharmacist and a morphine addict is I think that's... The only thing worse is to be a locksmith and a crankhead.
It's true.
Right? Because you're just one thing after, you're just feeding your addiction. Like, I can make keys to anywhere.
Well, plus you expect reliable work out of your pharmacist. You don't want to know his substance issues.
But what really happened was in the late 1800s, in the Gilded Age... There was a lot of temperance movements in the United States. Temperance movements are as old as the U.S. They were originally something that started burbling up in the 1810s.
Religious fundamentalism has always had a place on these shores.
That's right.
And one of its symptoms was temperance.
Temperance. And it was big in the South among Baptists until the Civil War, at which point... temperance started to feel like a northern conspiracy against a southern good time.
No juleps.
And so after the Civil War, there was a lot of sort of temperance became a northern thing, but then it had a resurgence in the South. And in 1885, in Georgia, they passed a statute that allowed different Georgia towns to decide for themselves whether they would have prohibition in the town. And it was kind of sweeping Georgia. More and more towns adopted prohibition. And it looked like it was going to be all of Georgia. And by 1905, it was.
But in the whole state was dry, basically?
The whole state was dry by 1905.
Drive to Alabama to get a drink.
That's right. Well, and it was, you know, the writing was on the wall, right? It was only a matter of time before all of America. But our Confederate colonel, John Stiff Pemberton.
Stiff?
Stiff, like Sith, except with another T. Stiff.
Stiff. That's his middle name.
Yeah, his middle name is Stiff, and I'm sure his mom called him John Stiff.
John Stiff.
Oh, John Stiff, you and your morphine. John Stiff, in his pharmacy, cooked up Coke, what we came to think of as Coca-Cola, which is named after cocaine, and the cola nut, which is the source of caffeine. It was like equal parts cocaine and caffeine.
And was this always goes without comment in the story, but that back then it was not uncommon to just go to the drugstore and get a cocaine-filled pick-me-up, I guess?
Yeah, well, cocaine continued to be present in American life.
That's what I hear.
Right up until now.
I've watched Saturday Night Live.
Just depends on, you know, where you're, you know, what street corner you're willing to pick it up. But coca leaves at the time were not prohibited, and Coca-Cola was invented as a temperance drink. So if you are trying to not drink alcohol, wean yourself off of alcohol.
Surefire move.
What would be more delicious than a nice cold Coke?
I was hiking in the Andes a couple years ago, actually with some friends who are here today, and in the Andes to this day, it's a remedy for everything. No matter what you say you have, they'll be like, well, chew some coca leaves. And, you know, you have altitude sickness, chew. And weirdly enough, they're right. Like, you feel quite a bit better. No matter what ails you.
I hate to drop this bomb on anybody, but cocaine, pretty good.
This used to be the Temperance Podcast.
Yeah.
What happened to the Temperance Podcast?
What?
So did John Stiff Pemberton's concoction taste like what? Do we know? Did it taste like Coke today, more or less?
Well, so Coca-Cola has a lot of mythology around its secret recipe, which
right.
It calls Merchandise 7X.
I loved that when I was a kid. It sounds so good.
Merchandise 7X. The recipe is kept in a comically large vault, although I think it would fit on a Post-it.
Sure, it's a...
But Coke has this very theatrical vault with like lots of neon lights pointed at it.
Did you ever hear the thing about how like only two people at Coke know the recipe and they're never allowed to be on the same plane?
Yeah.
It was all marketing stuff, right? I just fell for this as a kid.
Yeah, this is all... I think Coke does this even within the corporation. People are not allowed to be on the same floor as the recipe or something. But it's largely theater, particularly because now I think with organic chemistry, you could probably reduce it down to the microns of...
Sure, take it to a lab. And as we know, every supermarket chain in America has been able to produce its own Coca-like
right.
for 70 years. So it can't be that much of a mystery, but I don't know what... What does cola taste like?
Merchandise 7X, the potion is then added to the mixture.
There's a potion and a mixture?
Yeah, so there's the potion.
Does the flagon with the dragon have the pellet with the poison?
The mixture is just what you would expect. High fructose corn syrup, water, red dye number four, whatever. It's just a...
It's sweet goo. It doesn't have the carbonation in it yet. This is still syrup, or...
I think the carbonation goes in there, too. But the potion, Merchandise 7X, is introduced into the slurry in some, like, minute amount. And the potion has alcohol...
The potion with the motion goes to the slurry in a hurry.
That's right.
And do we know what's in the slurry?
The potion has alcohol...
Oh, sorry, the potion, yeah.
Orange oil, cinnamon oil, lemon oil, coriander, nutmeg, and neroli oil, which I was going to look up but didn't.
So if you can mix this all up in your kitchen, orange oil, lemon oil, coriander, and all the rest, it'll taste like Coke?
Well,
because Coke tastes like, I don't know, it's...
Go on.
Well, here's my question about Coke. Like, it swept the globe, right? Everybody in every town, city, and village all across the world knows what Coke is. They crave it. They love it. They want Coke. But it doesn't taste like anything they've ever had. Did Coke just happen upon the perfect taste that had never existed before? Or, like, did John Stith Pemberton, like, create some beverage? Or did they just market a weird-tasting thing so well that we all now think that Coke is an inevitability?
Well, these are the questions we're going to be covering in today's episode.
I am giving you an entree to do so.
No, you have really nailed the whole question of pop, right? Like, pop is not trying... Even orange pop doesn't taste like orange. Snozzberry pop doesn't taste like snozzberries.
Here, my theory about Coke would be it's maybe more the intensity of it than anything else. Like, if you took a kid who had never had a soda and you gave him anything that fizzy that tasted that strong, the kid would be hooked.
But as we've seen, any of you who have ever tried to get a root beer in Europe know that by European tastes, root beer, which we adore.
You and me or America?
We adore. Root beer, one of the great American flavors, tastes like cough syrup to anyone in Europe. They think it's completely repulsive, and only recently has root beer started to get a hold, a fraction of a toehold in Europe, after whatever. I mean, even nachos made it into Europe before root beer did.
They're not good. Do not go to Europe and order the nachos, yeah. But...
No. Also, strawberry milkshakes are not what they sound like in Europe. It's terrible, terrible.
So it does imply that maybe it is just like force of will and beautiful branding. The red swirl has just fooled seven continents into wanting a delicious Coke.
Well, I mean, this is the question that we all need to search our souls. Why do I like this garbage? I think what they found at the time was Coke kind of swept the world. In answer to your question, if you combined those things, could you make Coke? People have been trying to do it since then. As somebody in high school who learned that black powder was just sulfur, charcoal, and saltpeter, I tried many times to turn those three things into black powder. And I got a lot of different kinds of explosions and sparks, but never really that black powder that I was looking for. So
it's all about the proportions, maybe?
Yeah, yeah.
Merchandise 7X is an equation. It's not just
a
list.
That's right. But Coke took over the world, as you say, and you know, by the mid-century, it had 60% of the soft drink market in the United States, and everything else, including no-cal ginger ale and all the other cyclamate-sweetened beverages. Coke was overwhelmingly the preferred...
Coke was it?
It was. The preferred sugar-sweetened, caramel-colored, fizzy refresher.
Did other colas... Pepsi's very old as well, right? Did the other colas exist at the time? Are they just people chasing Coke?
So... Pepsi was also formulated in the South by a pharmacist. Pepsi's pharmacist was named Caleb Davis Bradham.
Oh, yeah, Brad's drink, right?
Yeah, and Brad's drink was what he called it at first. He named Pepsi.
I can't believe that didn't catch on, by the way.
I know. Well,
do you guys want a Coke or do you want a Brad's drink?
Wait till you hear what he named Pepsi after. He named it after dyspepsia, a word for an upset stomach. He was like, we're keeping the cola nut part of it.
Doesn't it limit your audience a little? Who is Pepsi for? Well, it's for everyone who currently has an upset stomach. No one else should buy or drink a Pepsi.
Although, are you also part of the generation where if you were sick to your stomach, your mom brought you some kind of soda pop?
Yeah, 7-Up.
Yeah.
And I guess my dad would just drink Alka-Seltzer, and I'd be kind of puzzled by that. The idea that if something's fizzy, it's good for you, really stuck with that generation somehow. Although maybe it does not withstand a lot of logical scrutiny.
Well, so Bradham had this, he was in North Carolina, and he had the innovation that we see a lot later in the Cola Wars, which was that he put Pepsi in, he had a relationship with someone who owned a lot of drugstores, and had Pepsi put into drugstores kind of as the only, not an alternative to Coke, but like replacing Coke. And through that distribution model, Pepsi became a pretty popular soda in the Southeast, kind of competing with...
If you force people to drink Pepsi, they will. Pepsi, when there's literally nothing else.
But Pepsi suffered... Pepsi didn't have Coke's deep pockets, and Pepsi suffered during World War I. There were a lot of there was a lot of sugar rationing, and there was actually, you know, a little bit of like commodities trading shenanigans. The price of sugar was really high, and the Pepsi folks bought a bunch of sugar super high when the price was super high, trying to like corner the sugar market. And like the Hunt brothers in the silver market, then the price of sugar crashed, and they were stuck with all this expensive sugar.
Pepsi's holding the bag.
Yeah. The sugar bag! Where's our bell? And so Pepsi went bankrupt in 1923. Now, John Stith Pemberton had gotten out of Coca-Cola really early. He sold it to a man named Asa Griggs Candler. These are all great serial killer names.
I feel like they're all just Confederate colonels. Yeah. Everyone back then was a Confederate colonel with three outrageous names.
Okay. I'll say, give me that Coca-Cola.
He bought Coke, the rights to Coke, for $2,300.
Whoa.
In 1888. And then he was a pretty good businessman. And he, now wait a minute, you're the one that always knows what dollars are in contemporary dollars.
That's probably low six figures, right? $2,300?
$2,300 is now $80,000.
High five figures?
In American dollars.
Revenge of the Stith.
That's right. But Pepsi couldn't really stay down for long. It was purchased by a set of new investors, brought back from the brink. Always second fiddle to Coke throughout the 50s and 60s. In fact, the diet soda market became a major part of the soda ecosystem starting in the mid-60s. Late 50s, 1958, Royal Crown Cola. Do you remember RC Cola? How many RC drinkers were there?
It's still around, right?
Yeah. I used to love RC Cola, and Royal Crown Cola introduced a pop called Diet Right.
Oh, yeah, Diet Right predates Tab.
Yeah, Diet Right, R-I-T-E, Diet Right. It came out nationally in 1962, and it immediately became massively popular. It was the fourth biggest soda within a few months of release because it was marketed almost exclusively to women. The idea of men drinking a low-calorie pop was extremely threatening. Can you imagine a thing less manly than a thing that didn't have all the sugar?
I think that persisted well into my adult life, where if you were out to dinner with the wrong person, he would say, oh, Ken's getting a Diet Coke. What, is your husband going to get one too? You know, hey, that's not okay. hypothetical person in this story.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. Cartoon bad guy in the story where I'm the hero.
But don't you feel like that? Don't you feel like that was a thing? Like, oh boy, look at Jane Fonda here drinking his Diet Coke. Like,
for sure.
Like that's that existed into modernity weirdly.
And we'll see this over and over. When Tab came out in '63, kind of like Coke's response to Royal Crown Cola's Diet Right, it was not only targeted at women, but the slogan was like, "Be beautiful," and all of the ads. You never saw a man in them.
Does that mean women were not drinking regular colas prior to this?
No, they were. They were guzzling regular colas.
It couldn't stop.
But then they were like, oh my God, be beautiful. That's me. And then boom, boom, boom. Diet Pops just came rolling out. The first Diet Pepsi was called Patio Diet.
Patio?
Patio. Which is where all the wives were hanging out while the husbands were at work, I guess.
It seems like a 70s magazine. You know, yeah. You got Sunset Magazine in your coffee table. You got the new Patio.
Patio Diet.
Patio Diet.
The original Diet Dr. Pepper, which I know is your favorite of the pops, was released as Dietetic Dr. Pepper.
Dietetic?
Dietetic.
That's going back to like the 1890s pharmacist thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to get that back, that market back.
And I feel like a lot of people were like, I don't have diabetes.
Yeah. It's too close to diabetic.
Yeah, and so they took the etic out of Dr. Pepper. And then, as we know from our childhood, toward the late 60s, it began the era where every single good thing caused cancer or heart disease. In 1969, a study came out that said cyclamate caused bladder cancer in rats.
I mean, of all the problems it could cause in the world, don't you feel like bladder cancer in rats is like a pretty manageable one?
But at the time, we didn't realize that bladder cancer in rats didn't necessarily mean bladder cancer in humans. And also, we didn't realize that one study with a sample base of 40 people, or 40 rats, didn't necessarily mean that cyclamate caused bladder cancer at all.
And the dosages were huge, right?
Yeah, they were basically force-feeding rats cyclamate and irradiating them with bladder cancer rays.
So do we know now that it was a bad rap? Cyclamates maybe are okay?
Well,
are cyclamates going to be redeemed in our story?
I think if any of you have been watching the same AI-generated videos on Instagram that I've been watching, we now know that nothing is bad for you or everything is. Eh. Not very long ago, a couple of months ago, my doctor said, well, your blood sugar has crossed the line. You now have diabetes part 2. Electric Boogaloo.
There's no way he said diabetes part 2.
I was barely listening.
I hope you liked diabetes, John. You got diabetes part 2.
I said, what does that mean? Does that mean I'm going to lose my foot? Does that mean I'm going to, like, you know, have diabetic shock or something? And he said, what we've been discovering is that diabetes part 2 will affect you to the degree that diabetes part 1 does if you live to be 600. And the rest of the time, it's just, you feel a little lightheaded. We're not even sure. And I was like,
diabetes is now a vibe.
Yeah, and I said, give me that Dr. Pepper.
Were you a cyclamates kid? I feel like generationally, I think I'm a saccharin kid. Like, by the time I was seeing diet soda, cyclamates were out.
Well, they had already been using saccharin along with cyclamate, because cyclamate tastes bad in one way, and saccharin tastes bad in another way. But the two of them together combine that metallic taste on one hand and like sour sort of dead rat taste on the other. And they canceled each other out. But now that cyclamate was, you know, went across the market, and diet in 69, diet soda had 20% of the pop market, and it sank to 3% like overnight. And so all the diet soda makers were rushing to change it all to saccharin. I think anyone older than 50 will remember a time when a scare would come out like this, and all of a sudden you couldn't eat that. Remember, wasn't there something with Doritos or Lay's potato chips? One of them made you poop. Oh, yeah, Olestra, right?
It was the fake.
There was always something.
Fake fat.
It was always something. I remember going to a restaurant the first time I ever had chicken Alfredo pasta. And I ordered it, and it came, and it was this, you know, it's probably 70,000 calories. And I very confidently said, it's got chicken. It's health food. Because chicken was healthier than whatever, the beef and pork that we normally ate 6 days a week.
Well, we've done a whole show about this, how America was kind of fooled into thinking that low-fat, high-sugar things were what they should be eating.
Right.
And we now know that that was just a conspiracy? We should have been...
Well, I'm not going to sit up here and talk to you about food conspiracies, or maybe...
I have some thoughts about beef tallow versus seed oils.
Our current Secretary of Health and Human Services believes that...
How to get a Seattle crowd on your side. Hope you guys wanted to think about RFK Jr. on a Saturday night.
So, by the mid-70s, there was a lot of stasis in the way Americans drink cola. We had really gotten... sort of set in our ways. Most people drank Coke. Pepsi was for people that couldn't get Coke. There were various diet drinks that women drank. And you know, effeminate men.
Present.
But Pepsi got it into their heads, because they were Americans. They were like, we're not satisfied being number two. We're going to go after the big dog. And they came up with a novel advertising gimmick called the Pepsi Challenge.
Wow. Did you hear that rumble of Pepsi Challenge approval? That's a thing I've heard of.
Rhubarb, rhubarb, rhubarb.
Big ad campaign.
Yeah.
Big part of my childhood.
And a lot of people don't realize that the Pepsi Challenge started in 1975. It's as old as you are. How many, and I know this is going to be a lot of people, how many of you actually authentically took the Pepsi Challenge? Oh, fewer than I thought.
Well, what does that mean? They were sitting outside of stores?
Yeah.
Because I used to see it in ads, but where you could go to the mall and just take the Pepsi Challenge?
Did you ever take the Pepsi Challenge?
No, I just saw people do it in ads, and they were all surprised and delighted when they picked Pepsi. Nobody in the ads ever picked Coke.
I actually took the Pepsi Challenge once. I was, and this is going to sound like a made-up story, as so many of my stories do, but it's 110% true. I was on a hovercraft.
You were not.
I was on a hovercraft crossing the English Channel, and there was a little booth with two comely young English women wearing elaborate kind of Pepsi costumes, and they said, would you like to take the Pepsi challenge? And I said, I'm an American. I can pass your Pepsi challenge. And I stood up, you know, stepped up, and they had the two little cups, and I tasted the one, and I said, that's Pepsi. I don't even need to taste the other one. And I was right.
So the Pepsi challenge is not challenging you which one you prefer.
It is.
But you also are... So you were doing a different challenge that you had just invented.
That's right. That's right.
Of identifying Pepsi.
Yeah.
That would be called the Pepsi challenge. You're not wrong.
Can you? God, we're going to give you 11 drinks. Can you tell which one is Pepsi? No, you can tell Pepsi from Coke. Pepsi is sweeter and less fizzy.
Less fizzy, huh?
And it tastes to me less fizzy, and it's less bracing. It's more, it's just sort of more, I don't know.
Is it a little more citrus? Does it have a little more lemon than Coke?
Yeah, maybe a little lemon. I mean, it's a, Coke tastes like your dad reprimanding you for not doing your homework. And Pepsi tastes like your mom telling you it's okay. He had a hard day at work.
Coke is the husband and Pepsi is the wife?
I'm not going to say that. I already got hardly any laughs when I said Coke was for women. So I'm not going to be that guy.
The crowd's on a knife's edge right now.
I know.
With you and cola gender roles.
We know we like Ken. We're not sure if we like this guy. All right. Well, Ken, why don't we take the Pepsi challenge right now?
Are we going to do this?
All right. Do you have any pre-existing vibe about Coke v. Pepsi?
Me?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, here's one problem that could get in the way. I don't usually drink full sugar cola. Like, I grew up drinking the diet stuff that my mom had around to the degree that, to me, artificial sweeteners taste like America. Like, they taste great. When I drink a full sugar soda, I'm like, wow, somebody took this Diet Coke and just made it all sticky. And so I'm not one of these hipster Mexican Coke purists. That said, I do generally prefer Diet Coke to Diet Pepsi. I have a list on my phone of restaurants in Seattle that don't have Diet Coke. Shall we name and shame? I really could if you wanted. No Tom Douglas place. No
Tom Douglas is a Pepsi franchise?
I think the problem in Seattle is many places will have neither. They will have Jones Cola Seattle Cola, yeah. Some small batch cola.
Yeah, that's right.
And I have a smaller, more elite, more hated list of restaurants that will say, yeah, and say they're bringing you a Diet Coke and then bring you something else, which is not a Diet Coke. The ultimate betrayal.
How do you feel about Diet Coke versus Coke Zero?
Oh, yeah. So in Europe, you can often get Coke Zero. I don't know if the recipe is different or if it's just a different artificial sweetener. I think it's largely a sweetener difference.
It's amount of sweetener.
Less sweetener?
Yeah,
maybe?
There's less sweetener in it.
And I know many people think Coke Zero tastes more like Coke. And as I've said, to me, that's not a sales point. I want something that tastes like the weird Diet Coke my mom used to drink in 1984.
Well, the problem is that in the 80s, saccharin, which replaced cyclamate, was also discovered to cause bladder cancer in rats.
What's the problem with these rats?
I mean, thing is, the story of pop in America is littered with dead rats.
It's rodent bladders as far as the eye can see.
So starting in the 80s, they switched the sweetener of Diet Pops to aspartame, which is probably the diet soda that you grew up drinking.
Yeah, I remember the switch when you lost the aftertaste in diet soda because, you know, so I kind of like aspartame. To me, all the commercials saying, hey, this is the good one, it's natural. They showed cows eating grass, and I was like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I want.
Exxon Mobil. Yeah, they have cows eating grass.
So to this day, I think of aspartame as good for me. Like, the marketing worked.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's great. It's great for you. It hardly causes any bladder cancer. The thing about me is artificial sweeteners. Now, I'm not going to say I'm a super taster, but I am a highly sensitive person. That's documented. And I can smell artificial sweetener a block away. I don't want anything to do with it. I would rather drink horse pee than drink a Diet Coke.
So these are not diet sodas.
This is the real stuff.
A Coke and a Pepsi, respectively. And you could really screw me over here. I could be like, oh, this one's way better. And then you're like, they're both Coke, Ken. like, I have the, yeah, I'm probably going to look dumb here.
All right, so here's what we're going to do. You're going to turn your back to the Pops.
So did you guys see which is which? Okay.
All right, so hang on before you go. So people in the United States really identified and identify with one of these two Pops way more than you would expect. And it isn't just regional. It was revealed to be in this whole grand experiment that we all were unwitting participants in, it was revealed to be one of those inexplicably deep cultural signifiers. Which brown sugar water you preferred apparently said a lot about who you were to yourself. My sister was a Pepsi girl. She would leave a restaurant if they only had Coke. And she's not alone. The world is full of these people, but...
They live among us. Yeah. Got to get the They Live glasses to find the Pepsi weirdos.
But the thing about the Pepsi challenge is that almost everyone who authentically took the Pepsi challenge, not almost everyone, but a majority, preferred Pepsi.
Enough that it was a working ad campaign for Pepsi.
A working ad campaign and a big embarrassment to Coke. And there's a lot of sort of just, I mean, I'm not going to say science behind it, because the scientists were all trying to see what caused cancer in rats. Scientists were very busy in the 70s. They were looking for Bigfoot, and they were trying to, and the Bermuda Triangle, and they were trying to...
Ancient aliens.
But Pepsi is sweeter. And in general, based on one sip of a thing...
If you're on a hovercraft,
you take one sip, people are going to prefer the sweeter, less kind of bracing... They want their mom, not their dad.
Interesting.
As we know from raising our own children, dad is an acquired taste... So, the Pepsi challenge was often to people that had who really identified with one or the other Pop. The Pepsi challenge could be very unsettling.
It's like going on Henry Louis Gates and finding out that you're not Irish, or you're,
that's right,
your grandpa's not your grandpa, or
that's
something.
Right. And you showed up with a shillelagh. And you're like, what do you mean I'm not Irish? Like.
But I assume Coke's response would be that, well, if you had a whole can, you'd prefer the other one.
Yeah, but that's a hard commercial to make. Coke responded to the Pepsi challenge with a series of commercials starring beloved American Bill Cosby, who effectively said... This sweet garbage isn't what you want as a regular American, you know, like, who loves kids and America. Like, he was mocking they actually had the Pepsi challenge in the background, and he was like...
If there's one American I trust near my beverage, it is Bill Cosby. You gotta put the Coke in the glass.
Wow, you've had that Cosby impression for decades, and you can't use it anymore.
Always in my pocket, not funny anymore.
All right, so let's do the Pepsi challenge and see if you and your refined tastes.
And I'm picking my favorite, or
you're just trying to tell us which one you prefer. Would you like a palate cleanser of some kind?
Do you have any RC Cola? I do have water. Keeping this down here away from Mr. Cosby.
Uh,
Hold on.
Ken, you've heard of HelloFresh because you eat HelloFresh. I have been practically living on HelloFresh since before the pandemic. They're the number one meal kit in America, and they make home cooking easier with chef-crafted recipes and fresh ingredients that are delivered straight to your door. I'm not talking about the $150 you're going to spend at DoorDash getting salty garbage delivered to your door. I'm talking about fresh ingredients that are quick to prepare, straight to your door. And this fall, HelloFresh is serving even more to love, because this isn't the HelloFresh you remember from the pandemic. It's bigger. HelloFresh has doubled its menu. There are over 100 options each week, including seasonal dishes and recipes from around the world. They're also healthier, because the menu has gotten 15 or more high-protein recipes each week. Options like grass-fed ribeyes or lamb chops. Try DoorDashing lamb chops. Forget it. HelloFresh helps you eat greener with veggie-packed recipes that have two or more veggies per dish. And HelloFresh has gotten tastier. There's steak and seafood now, delivered every week for no extra cost, with three times the seafood options. Most meal kits have zero seafood options. You're going to savor this season with hearty fall recipes like beef chili and honey glazed pork tenderloin. These are autumnal dishes from HelloFresh. You're going to discover new seasonal produce each week, from leeks to broccolini to Italian eggplant and more. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to join me in living the HelloFresh life. Ugh, HelloFresh. If it weren't for HelloFresh, I'd be a shadow of a man. What I want you to do, and I want this for you, I want you to go to HelloFresh.com/Omnibus10, that's 10, FM. Now to get 10 free meals, that's the FM, 10 free meals and a free breakfast for life. That's one per box with an active subscription. Free meals applied as a discount on first box. New subscribers only, and it varies by plan. That's HelloFresh.com/Omnibus10FM to get 10 free meals and one free breakfast for life. Omnibus 10FM is all one word. Do yourself a favor and get HelloFresh today.
I think it's Coke Pepsi. For my next trick.
But which did you prefer?
I'm doing the small sip.
You want to spit it in a bucket?
It's true, even though I am Mr. Coke, and I could tell this was my beloved Coke, I think, judging by your reaction. Should we do the thing? Yeah, look at that.
Even though Coke is your thing?
Even though Coke is my thing, this did have kind of a, I think it is a little lemonier. It popped a little bit more. I guess it's sweeter, although that's not what I thought. I wasn't like, oh, I'll have the sweet one. It just read as kind of a brighter taste. I might have fallen for the Pepsi challenge if I was on a hovercraft at the wrong time.
Yeah, on a sip-by-sip basis, I'm going to say that Pepsi, in this instance, wins the Pepsi challenge.
Oh, man. Is your sister here tonight, your Pepsi-loving sister?
No, she couldn't come. She's at work.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, some of... some of us have to work.
That was a rich comic vein. So, Susan's at work, huh?
Susan's at work. Yeah. In her 50s and still has to work. Not everybody gets a game show.
People are shocked that this podcast never really caught on with millions of listeners. With famous bits like, Susan has to work.
So, Coke was I think, understandably threatened by the fact that the two drinks side by side, although Coke had a much larger market share, that Pepsi could make this claim and could demonstrate it over and over in blind taste tests.
And Pepsi often, they moved, I think, around this time into this idea that they were the future, right? Young people, the Pepsi generation, you know, Coke might, Pepsi's always banking on the idea that Coke's going to die off somehow.
Well, Pepsi president Roger Enrico, at this point, was a guy that apparently was really fun at the office, and not the kind of fun where we're like, but it was just a guy that loved to go to work and loved working for Pepsi. It's fun to be number two and gunning for number one. And Pepsi did identify itself, not just with the youth market, but as like the upstart, like nothing to lose. Kapow, kapow. Pepsi, we're out here in front of the supermarket with like a like an overturned milk crate.
I remember the sense of, what's the word, the transgressiveness of a big company actually calling out their rival by name in the ad. You know, it would always be like Tide detergent versus the other brand. But like the fact that Pepsi was actually like, people don't like Coke. I was like, can they say that? When's the FCC going to step in?
It really was true that this was, you know, we used to live in a civilization where people had a little decorum about naming the other brand. And this was considered like déclassé, even. At this point, Pepsi had moved their headquarters from North Carolina to upstate New York. And
is that where Pepsi is today? I have no idea.
Purchase New York.
It's funny because...
Thanks for coming in.
It's funny because Coke is so iconically Georgia, Atlanta, and Pepsi? I don't know. It's everywhere and nowhere. It's the Holy Ghost.
I think... Pepsi now has relocated back to North Carolina, but it's all in the Cayman Islands as far as I'm concerned. Like, I... Who knows? Boeing is headquartered in Chicago.
Of course. Too soon.
But it became, it was also, you know, more than just kind of identifying with these brands. It was also very regional. And the Coca-Cola company in Atlanta really started to respond to Pepsi by saying, it's a Yankee soda.
Oh, wow.
Pepsi responded by, and in one of the major coups of its time, this was before celebrities really were in advertising to this degree. There were, Ronald Reagan was selling Chesterfields. Right? They were selling
not,
bourbon.
Not while in office. That's more of a Trump coin era thing. But yeah, in the 60s, movie stars would occasionally be in ads. But
yeah, they'd be in ads for bourbon or whatever. But
they weren't like the biggest, hottest celebrities. I think I know where this is going.
Yeah, I mean, when Oscar Mayer was selling It's OSCAR, they got Mikey. They didn't get Cher.
Sure. You were always excited to see Florence Henderson...
Yeah,
selling Shake and Bake or an F. Funicello selling Skippy. These were the level of celebrity you'd see in ads.
But apparently, at this point in the early 80s, Michael Jackson actually went to Pepsi and said,
I really love your soda.
We're going to be starting something.
Oh.
He said,
"Hoo, Shimon."
He said, for $5 million... I'll change the lyrics to Billie Jean to Pepsi.
Didn't he have a two-syllable song like Beat It that he could have used?
Oh, no, maybe it was Beat It.
Okay. Pepsi.
I mean, I was researching it at some point.
It just seems like Billie Jean is harder to rewrite.
Yeah,
has he been impregnated by Pepsi?
No, because it was something like, you know, it was like... new generation, you know, something.
He had new lyrics.
It was new lyrics. He didn't just say Pepsi. It had, you know, he was part of a slogan. But all of a sudden, Michael Jackson was the face of Pepsi. And, you know, famously, it was filming a Pepsi commercial that he caught his hair on fire and was like, you know, third degree burns.
This was the biggest news in the world for us. There's probably many people here too young to know that, like, Michael Jackson getting burned in a Pepsi commercial was, like, the second biggest news story of 1984, 5?
No, it was a little
earlier.
Yeah, right. 1983? 83. And weirdly, or maybe not weirdly, Michael Jackson getting third-degree burns in a Pepsi commercial did not affect the sale of Pepsi, really, at all. It just put Pepsi... There's no such thing as bad publicity. Just put Pepsi on the front page.
For every one person who was like, well, I don't want the burn commercial drink, there's somebody else who's like, oh yeah, I just heard about Pepsi. It evens out.
Well, and so this, you know, now you've got Bill Cosby as the face of Coke, Michael Jackson as the face of Pepsi.
There's a real discredited celebrity-a-palooza.
So Pepsi really at this point was like the hip cola. Their sales were increasing. Coke was still the leader, but all the proliferation of other Coke products and other beverage products had chipped away at Coke's dominance over the pop market.
Imagine if you're a Coke executive seeing this century-long hegemony beginning to crumble.
So at the time, Coke was run by three men. Roberto Crispullo Guizueta Cantera, a man born in Havana, Cuba in 1931. The president, Brian Dyson, was born in Argentina in 1935.
Brian? I'm trying to imagine a gaucho named Brian.
His name was Brian. This is precisely the audience for that joke. And then the vice president of marketing was Sergio Zaiman, born in Mexico City in 1945. This was the triumvirate.
Was this unusual back then? If you asked me to picture an 80s CEO from the South, I am not picturing like three Latino guys.
Well, I don't know. Brian Dyson maybe wasn't even Latino. I think he was just a guy whose parents happened to be in Argentina. I don't know. He grew up in Argentina. Yeah, I think it was uncommon, but also, you know, the beverage market, Coke, it was...
Big developing world market, right? Like Coke's huge
big.
All over the world.
Huge all over the world. But the three of them together, although very nice men... did not seem like they had their finger on the pulse of youth culture. And Pepsi president Roger Enrico was like empowering people to do funny stunts. He was like all about celebrity culture. And these three guys, very threatened by Pepsi, one of the things they did was... introduce Diet Coke. Tab had been falling in sales. And at this moment in 1983, a couple of things happened, and one of them was the introduction of light beer in a way that was not marketed exclusively to women.
Oh, yeah.
And they
less filling, tastes great.
That's right. And they introduced Diet Coke right at this moment. And again, men in the ads. And it was a revolution in all of our minds. In America, for the first time, it was possible, as a man, to drink something a little less fattening. And Diet Coke soared to being the number three. It passed 7-Up. It was right, all of a sudden, right behind Pepsi in sales.
And did Pepsi not yet have a diet drink? Or
Pepsi had Diet Pepsi, but nobody wanted it. It tasted like lemons or something, and it was not very good. It was a different recipe than Tab.
Oh, Diet Coke was not just
Diet Tab. Coke was not just rebranded Tab. It was something else. It was Coke. They were worried about introducing Diet Coke because it was the first thing that had ever used the Coke name that wasn't Coke. They were worried it was going to water down the brand. Aspartame it. But it came out, Diet Coke came out, and it was a super hit. You would think that Coke would be satisfied with that. But this constant, niggling threat of the Pepsi challenge over and over, and what they heard time and time again was that people actually liked Pepsi better.
Sleepless nights for all three of these guys.
Sleepless nights.
Nightmares of the Pepsi challenge.
And so they held a secret set of meetings where Sergio Zimon was charged with resolving this issue for once and for all.
Jeez. Sounds like the VANSI conference or something.
Yeah, let's put Pepsi to bed. Now, it should be said that PepsiCo is a much larger company than Coca-Cola.
At the time, Pepsi owned a bunch of other stuff.
Pepsi is the second biggest food conglomerate after Nestle in the world. Pepsi bought Frito-Lay in 1965. They own Quaker Oats, they own Gatorade, they own Tropicana. For a while there, I think we all recall when Pepsi owned Kentucky Fried Chicken and Taco Bell.
And Pizza Hut. Yeah, I remember this.
Pepsi now has 23 different brands under its umbrella with over $1 billion in annual sales.
Bigger than Coke to this day?
Coke is owned by Berkshire Hathaway.
Oh, well, they're doing okay.
So basically, they're a subsidiary of Burlington Northern. They're still 94th in the Fortune 500, but they're not equivalent to Pepsi. So Pepsi's doing okay. And even then. But Coke globally, like Pepsi's not really a factor anywhere else. But in the United States, Zimon and his brain trust come up with what they call Project Kansas.
Do we know why Kansas?
Yes.
All right, moving on.
It's called Project Kansas because one of those sort of Norman Rockwell-y kind of pictures of an old cowboy drinking Coke that if you saw it, you would recognize it. It's a painting that hangs in the offices at Coca-Cola. That guy was from Kansas. He's the real guy. The guy, it's a picture of a guy in Kansas drinking a Coke, a real guy. Project Kansas.
So get back to its roots, right?
Get back to its roots by changing the formula. They worked on a new formula for Coca-Cola that was going to address this sweetness preference that people had.
The idea is to make a Pepsi beater.
Make a Pepsi beater.
Are they saying we need to make it taste more like Pepsi?
We need to make it taste better than Pepsi.
Okay, they don't say more like Pepsi.
No.
Because that was a lot of the takeaway, I remember. Coke became Pepsi.
Well, that was really what Pepsi wanted you to hear. What they came up with was a formula, though. When they did their own Pepsi Coke challenge with three of these cones, people preferred the new taste of the new formulation more or better than Coke and Pepsi.
And did they do this in ads? I feel like I vaguely remember this. Or is this is just private?
This Pepsi? Is all happening as part of Project Kansas.
Top secret.
And at the time, marketing was an undeveloped science, kind of like it is now, except worse. And they really privileged... what are you looking at over there?
The time.
What are we at?
8:45.
What does that mean?
We've been doing this for an hour and 15 minutes.
We've been doing this for an hour and 15 minutes?
Yeah.
I've only got 45 minutes left. Marketing put too much stock in this sample set and not enough stock in the emotional reaction that they saw when it was revealed that people preferred this new thing. They saw people have hurt feelings about it.
Betrayal.
Like what? And they ignored
just
that.
The idea that a new Coke existed, right?
Well, or just that you're telling me that I don't like... I'm a Pepsi person. You're telling me I don't like Pepsi.
There's no right answer here. You're going to piss off everybody. I like Coke. I like Pepsi. Nope. You like this third thing you've never heard of, loser.
And so within this brain trust, they thought they'd solved the problem. They were going to change the formula of Coke. And... it was in order to appeal to the tastes of consumers. What every consumer that they ran this by preferred this new drink, and this was going to put Pepsi to bed, and it was also going to give the people what they wanted. And so, again, their logic was they didn't want to water down the Coke brand. There were only two Cokes, Diet Coke and Coke. They didn't want to come out with Coke. New friend.
Dueling Cokes that are cannibalizing each other's sales.
And a lot of this is because of bottlers being a noisy group of dissatisfied cranks who are like, we'll have to have four bags of stuff instead of three bags of stuff.
We just lost our bottler listenership.
Sorry to any bottlers in the room. So on April 23rd, 1985... there was a press conference at Lincoln Center in New York.
Wow. The center of world high culture.
It was on a Monday, and Guizueta and Dyson and Zyman were all on stage, all, you know, graying dudes. We're all on stage in front of a pretty staid backdrop that said Coca-Cola, introducing this new world. And they weren't calling it New Coke. They were just calling it Coke.
This is Coke. Coke tastes different now. Deal with it.
The problem was that the word had gotten out to Pepsi on Friday night.
Ooh.
This press conference was on Monday.
Who's Pepsi the Judas? I want to know who the Judas is who sold out Coke.
Well, I think Coke actually sent a thing out like, everybody be there on Monday. Pepsi spent the weekend trying to figure out what to do, and they realized, wait, we just won the Cola Wars. And so Monday, they had already talked to every journalist, like, we won the Cola Wars. Guess what?
Coke surrenders.
And so at this press conference where the three guys came out like, hey, ready for this one? The journalists were all like, well, so you're trying to taste more like Pepsi? And they were like, what? No. Well, so basically you're admitting that you lost the Cola Wars? What? What? No. It was a disaster. A disaster for Coke. Now, what's crazy is they were all set up. Within a week, all old Coke was gone.
It's like de-Stalinization.
Yeah. They had erased Trotsky from every picture of Coke. And they didn't even have new cans yet. But the new Coke was put in old cans, but it had a gold top instead of the silver top.
Ah.
They put red screw caps on the bottles instead of white screw caps. New Coke was everywhere. And all of their research said that people loved it. It was selling great gangbusters.
New Coke was a success.
New Coke was a success. Despite what we've all come to hear, and despite what ended up happening, New Coke was popular everywhere.
Something to keep in mind, by the way, as you listen to Omnibus 2.0 after I leave the show. New Coke was a hit.
There is no comparison between New Coke and Omnibus, but yes. New Coke was super popular. One of the places it was the most popular was Spokane, Washington. Everybody was like, give us that new Coke. Everywhere but in the South.
Is something really a hit if you have to point out that it's especially big in Spokane? Like, is that really the real sign of a smash hit?
Well, it comes up later. That's right. Spokane, also the setting for Red Dawn 2, the less successful remake of Red Dawn.
It took the Russians longer to get to the Cubans.
It became the Chinese, and then when the Chinese complained...
North Korea.
Yeah, they changed it to North Korea because they realized that more people watch movies in China than in the United States.
You have to skip a lot of other places to invade Spokane.
Well, for the North Koreans to get to Spokane,
yeah,
that'd be quite a trip.
You'd think we would have noticed here.
Up the Columbia River. So it was a big hit, but Pepsi was making hay about it. And a guy from Seattle by the name of Gay Mullins. This is a sophisticated crowd.
Can't laugh at people named Gay anymore.
They wanted to laugh at Gay Mullins so bad, but they knew better. Gay Mullins was an older guy, a Seattle retiree, who was looking to start a marketing company. And with $100,000 of borrowed money, he started Old Cola Drinkers of America.
You didn't even have to register a URL back then. Just get a P.O. box, and the world is your oyster.
And it cannot be overstated what a big news story this was in the United States. An Old Cola Drinkers of America with Guy Mullins at the head. I'm sorry, Gay Mullins at the head. He was on all the news programs saying, we're not going to drink this new Coke.
He's protesting.
We want the classic Coke.
And people were deeply offended in that essentially American way.
You're not giving us a choice of freedom. Old Coke is freedom. New Coke is communism.
It's an irresistible news story that you could see why journalists would love to talk to this guy.
Made more real by the fact that the CEO was born in Havana. There were legitimately people saying, this is a Cuban conspiracy.
Oh, wow.
Communism.
The problem with that is that Castro himself loves Coke. And Castro had a press conference that said, I'm not going to do my Castro impression.
But maybe he will.
No. No. He said,
New Coke is a capitalist conspiracy.
Castro was anti-New Coke.
Gracias, gracias.
He said that New Coke was a sign of capitalist decadence.
You'd think that Coke could have spun that around. Like, we made Castro mad.
Yeah, you see this? Well, so the folks at Coke had no expectation that this was going to happen. They were freaked out by the response. They were so just like, they could not fathom that people wouldn't love the idea of a delicious new Coke. They just needed to try it. And the fact that people were dumping new Coke in the streets.
It's a lesson about change more than it's a lesson about how much cinnamon oil there is in something.
Yeah,
you know, like,
that's right.
People just didn't want Coke to be different. It doesn't matter if it's better or worse. They wanted it to be the same.
People were stockpiling old Coke. People were bringing old Coke from Europe because it had taken longer to bring old Coke. And so 2.5 months after introducing new Coke, they capitulated and said, well, we're going to bring back old Coke.
I remember right, they were going to keep calling new Coke Coke, but Coke... Good Coke would be classic Coke?
Classic right? Coke.
Classic Coke.
This was an event so monumental that Peter Jennings, no relation,
No relation.
And ABC News interrupted General Hospital with a special bulletin.
Keep in mind that Peter Jennings had reported from Vietnam and Afghanistan. He was probably pissed that he got called in to do the afternoon classic Coke breaking news.
No, he thought it super sucked. And they said, we're going to keep selling Coke. We're going to now reintroduce classic Coke. And sales of Coke across the board went through the roof. Coke.
The whole thing was a masterful gambit, it turned out.
People love Coke. Coke. People love classic Coke. So immediately there were conspiracy theories that this whole thing was planned out. The three guys in charge of Coke came forward, really mea culpa'd the whole thing and said, look, we're not smart enough to have thought of. There's like zero chance that we thought this up, but we're really sorry that we screwed with your Coke.
Yeah, the guys who could do nine-dimensional chess aren't running soda companies, probably.
What's nuts is that they actually, right at the same time, had stealth introduced Cherry Coke. And Cherry Coke is largely responsible for the fact that Coke became, that the Coca-Cola company was selling like 30% more. It was, everybody was just buying Cherry Coke.
People fondly remembered getting it at the drugstore, at the soda counter, and now you could get it in the can for the first time.
That's right. Unfortunately, reintroducing classic Coke, Bill Cosby felt like the whole thing had damaged his credibility.
I can't even look at Vanessa and Rudy anymore.
So Coke replaced him with Max Headroom.
It's like the most 80s story ever.
Yeah. So
Max Headroom, he'll be popular forever.
Anyway, Gay Mullins had one last shot at this. When they reintroduced classic Coke, someone did a three-prong taste test. New Coke, classic Coke, Pepsi. Gay Mullins, at a press conference, took the Pepsi Coke challenge. And could not, he was like, that's Pepsi, that's old Coke, that's new Coke. And it was really old Coke, Pepsi.
Oh, wow. 0 for 3?
Completely. And he said the problem was that they had introduced high fructose corn syrup at this same time. And that was the real, he wanted sugar, real sugar. But they'd been doing that ever since. It was all high fructose corn syrup.
It wasn't actually sugar until.
No, okay. It had been happening for a long time. So, with one coda.
Cola coda? Coca
coda? Cola coda.
There we go. I'm going to do that. I'm going to take one more shot at that. A Coca coda?
New Coke in 1990 was renamed Coke 2. Also Electric Boogaloo. And Coke 2 was popular, very popular in very remote little pockets of America where it stayed. They kept selling Coke too. One of them, Spokane, Washington. But then they eventually phased out New Coke, except in 2019, as part of a tie-in with the television show Stranger Things.
Oh, 80s nostalgia.
Coke produced 500,000 cases of New Coke and sold out within hours. People were like, New Coke is better than Coke.
Coke's like, we've been saying that.
And there was all this Stranger Things affiliated, like, call for Coke to start making New Coke again. My God, it's what we've wanted this whole time. And Coke so far has not made any New Coke.
I feel like this is very propitious for Omnibus 2.0. People actually liked when the recipe changed. They were okay with change. They could still, and especially when Classic Coke came back, and you could still go, as it were, listen to the old episodes.
Right. You can listen to the old episodes and feel like, wow, this is kind of sour and unpleasant. The new Omnibus 2.0. Oh, just got so sweet. It's just like the loving embrace of my mother.
Max Headroom loves it. I guess I have not really had the chance, if this is my last regular co-hosting show, to say any kind of farewell. Should I take a second and do that before we have our outro? A little.
We did Omnibus for 8 years in my basement. And as Ken became, he was already very famous. But as he became more and more famous,
you had to start letting me out of the basement.
He continued to come to my basement every couple of weeks and record this show, which was more and more a real event for my neighbors.
John's elderly neighbors, never more excited than when I pull in.
They were out there with their rakes, just like... So I think you should. Do you have a little something you'd like to say to our listeners, our fans?
Yeah, actually, I wrote up a little letter I'd like to read if I could, but I wanted to get some help. John, as you know, like, for 8 years of Omnibus, there's hardly been anybody on the show besides you and me. We are not a guest star kind of a show, mostly because we don't know famous people. Amy Mann read a poem one time.
That's right. She read a poem.
And I think my son, we called him once to ask him something about something at his middle school, but I can't remember what it was.
My daughter Marlo came in the room at one point, and we said, "Hey, Marlo, would you like to be on Omnibus?" And she said, "No."
So yeah, she's been on the show.
Technically, she is a guest on the show.
One syllable. I'd like to bring on one person who has been on Omnibus before. When we had, back in entry, I'm sure you all remember, entry 1446.easy2784, it was the one where Amy Mann read the poem, but accompanied by the violin stylings of our friend Mary Kobayashi. Mary, come on out. Thank you for coming to help us out, Mary. My dearest futurelings. Indications are very strong that I will be taking leave of my beloved Omnibus podcast soon, and perhaps even tonight. Lest I should not be able to communicate my words to you again, I feel impelled to write a few lines that you may chance upon in your RSS feed when I am no more. We wished only to create for the distant future a full record of humanity, its preppy fashions and religious cults, its enlisted animals and its mail trucks, along with, and this was crucial, long, pointless digressions about our pets and online habits, and especially our childhoods. But now, another audience beckons, and I must leave John to toil in his bunker without my occasional forced chuckles or confused follow-up questions about drug culture. A great sorrow falls upon me when I think that I may never speak to you again, not even those of you I love most dearly, the Patreon supporters at the higher tiers. But in my moments of doubt, I remember my love of America's greatest public institution, the quiz show. Jeopardy has called upon me, and despite my many cares and hesitations, I must obey. My love for this podcast is deathless. Over 8 joyful years of mildly interesting historical anecdotes, our listeners and us were bound together with mighty cables of affection that nothing but the Almighty could break. And yet my love of game shows and their generous paychecks comes over me like a strong wind, and I must obey. I meant to spend the rest of my days with you all, completing this cultural catalog, and how it pains me that we never even got around to Brutalism or Grit Magazine or Hitler's Dog or the Goodyear Blimp. How we might have laughed together watching these ideas develop into honorable, overlong weekly episodes instead of leaving them to the dollop. But oh, futurelings, if departed podcast hosts can come back to their audiences through repeated re-listens, making the same bad puns again and again, then I shall always be with you in the years to come. The soft breeze upon your cheek by day will be me singing the suffragette song from Mary Poppins again for some reason. The sweet stupor that pulls you to the pillow at night will be my voice explaining a boring thought experiment in theoretical math. Futurelings, do not mourn me. Try to enjoy the other less funny guest hosts. And wait for me, for if Providence and my TV schedule allow, we shall meet again. Your most devoted, Ken. Mary Kobayashi, everybody. And that concludes entry 835.LK0538, certificate number 38738, in the omnibus. Futurelings, we were products of our time, found on various social media platforms where we never should have been wasting our time, at Omnibus Project, individually at Ken Jennings and at John Roderick. You could send us email at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. or even physical items to our P.O. box, which is now... What's the new P.O. box, John? Unclear.
I changed the P.O. box to one in Burien. Yeah.
Wow.
Burien represent. And I don't remember what it is. Our old P.O. box is 55744 Shoreline, Washington, 98165. 55.
55, there we go.
The new one is 98166. Grant?
If you send stuff to the old one, it just means I have to run it over to John, yeah. So
to
it's fine.
To the great delight of my neighbors.
Elderly neighbors in Burien will be delighted if you keep sending stuff to the one up in Shoreline. What else? Futurelings congregate online in various Facebook groups, subreddits, Discord, search for... Yeah, give it up for subreddits. And of course, the most important way to support the show going forward, first of all, keep listening. I will be back as time permits. But it's going to be very exciting to hear from all of John's coterie of co-hosts, including many listeners, I think, are going to have the chance to chat with you.
The marvelous thing about Omnibus listeners is that they are all very informed about things. And many of them are informed about things very unrelated to what they do most of the time. So I've talked to several lawyers that know really everything about rubber bands and like bats that live under bridges. So farming this out to our crowd, I think is going to make for a very interesting show.
All these people that used to yell factual corrections at their device when yeah. We were talking, now they can do it live to you.
Yeah, that's right. It's they're all used to the show, so they know the cadence. But the problem is that they laugh where you never would have.
Please enjoy Easily Amused Omnibus. New Coke. And of course, the best way to support the show, keep listening, but also go to patreon.com/omnibusproject. This show, as we've said many times, would have been over at least 5 years ago because our former corporate master did such a terrible job of selling ads that it was not clear why it should exist. And it was, if not for those who supported the show on Patreon, thank you. It means a lot.
Now that one of the hosts of Omnibus is not a millionaire, In fact, all of the hosts of Omnibus are not a millionaire.
Now that neither of the hosts.
Neither of the hosts. Although there might be millionaires it's coming true. On the show. They're not. I don't require them to do a tax disclosure.
You're not doing class warfare and keeping millionaires off the show.
No millionaires.
Please support the show on Patreon.
There's a reason why few podcasters try to make selfie videos as they're recording.
Futurelings, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come. But if the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may have been our final word. But if Providence allows, we wish you many goods and cheesecake. And hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.
Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.